Guys, coming up next to the stage, this is another tech wizard for Improvised Star Trek. This is true. He outfitted Wiimotes for their live show to make cool sound effects like phasers and stuff. That, I don't even know how the fuck you do that. That's amazing. This is Dan Granata.
Yeah!
So I was laying on the back, in the back of our massive green wood-paneled Ford station wagon looking up at the night sky. And it was Christmas Eve 1988. And we were on the way home from my grandmother's house, but we called it Boucher's house because it was Toledo, Ohio, and like everyone else in Toledo, my grandmother is Polish. Now, the way I remember it, my dad was the one who started it. He pointed out the window and said, "Hey, look, it's Rudolph. Do you see him?" Now, my sisters and I all pressed our faces to the windows, and sure enough, clear against the black was a gently pulsing point of red light. Now, I was a pretty observant kid, and even at 8, I was regarded as the precocious genius of the family. And I'm fairly certain that I had seen the blinking red light on the top of a radio tower before, but for the life of me, I couldn't see anything below that light that night. And my little heart thrilled in a way usually reserved for the 20 minutes after drinking an entire pitcher of Kool-Aid. But I wanted confirmation. So I asked Julie, who was 5 years older than me and generally my second source in such matters. And Julie confirmed the earlier reports. "And we have to get home fast," she said, "because if we're not asleep by the time Santa gets to our house, he won't deliver any presents." That was it for me. I scrambled to my spot in the back of the car and tried to get started on sleep, exactly like a kid on Christmas Eve. Now, I've never had a problem believing, and believing hard. Tell me a good story, or even hand me the pieces of a halfway interesting story, and I'm off to Middle Earth, or Narnia, or Eternia, or Thundera, or even, God help me, Hawkhaven, satellite base of the Silverhawks. Or Kryn, for Christ's sakes. There are 190 Dragonlance novels now. Oh, my God. I couldn't get enough. But I knew this stuff wasn't real, but I wanted it to be. Like Fox Mulder, I wanted to believe. But, as with Agent Mulder's obsession, this immersive imagination has a cost. For one thing, I can't watch horror movies. I got pressured into watching Gremlins at a friend's house one night, and for the next decade, I wasn't able to stand the sight of the dark tool closet in the basement. I still can't take the X-Files episode Pusher. And it doesn't matter how bad or implausible a movie is. A year ago, I watched World War Z, and I woke up at 2 a.m. in a full panic attack. Every time I started to nod off, my sleep-deprived brain would cobble together scenarios and whisper, "Yeah, but what if?" Which brings me back to December 1989, a year after the unidentified flying object. Now, Mrs. Welter had left the classroom while we took a quiz, and, of course, the strictly prohibited chatter immediately starts and swiftly turns to Christmas presents. Now, I'm in the back row, silently crushing my times nines. Real good at it. When David DeLong reveals that he found his presents and his mom admitted that she put out all the ones from Santa. Now, a bunch of the other kids, the cool kids, chimed in that they had always known that. And my heart started pounding. I said nothing. That night, I lay in bed looking up at the stucco pattern on the ceiling, and I couldn't sleep. I wasn't able to ask my mom about it, not just because I didn't want to know the truth and know for sure that the Nintendo my parents refused to buy me wasn't going to magically show up under the tree. I didn't ask because, if it were true, I had just stumbled on a conspiracy. And not for the first time, my mind raced ahead. Forget Mario. What if it were true? There was no Santa, and no one told me, and then I grew up and had kids, and they didn't get any presents because I assumed Santa was bringing them, and I ruined their lives. Now, I know as nerd origins go, I had it relatively easy. I never really got beat up or even actively tormented, not as far as I can remember. But I always felt isolated, even, or maybe especially, in crowds. I think it's the double-edged vorpal sword of an active imagination. We can take ink on paper and create whole mythic landscapes that we know aren't real, but are real in the important place, in our hearts and in our guts, because those words and those worlds speak to our secret hopes and desires. For kids who grew up imagining, no, feeling the wind above the peaks of Pern, it's comparatively less difficult to weave a conspiracy narrative set in the here and now from the threads of loneliness and alienation and our 2 a.m. fear that everyone else is in on the joke. If it's gotten any easier, and I honestly don't know if it has, it's likely because I've surrounded myself with people who are as imaginative and as anxiety-ridden as myself. I see myself in them, and vice versa, and that's helped me get a feel for when I'm going down the rabbit hole. And more importantly, it makes me feel less alone. I just turned 35 this week, and I'm still jumping into strange blue boxes, and I'm still pretty sure I'm going to fuck up those hypothetical kids. Only now I have a wife to help me with both. It turns out the truth is out there. Thank you.
Also, happy birthday.
Thank you.
When was it?
Wednesday.
Thanks for celebrating it with us, man.
I didn't do anything else.
Yeah, awesome.